Welcome in to the Davis and Beadle podcast. Jim Davis, Curtis Beadleman. I know you hate the music. You think it's like from some 80s sitcom. Go ahead, man. All the jokes you want about the opening music, go right ahead. Get them out of your system.
Is this from, what was the one with Cousin Larry and Balky?
Perfect Strangers.
Perfect Strangers.
Perfect Strangers, yes. It sounds like it'd be that.
I love that show. Cousin Larry.
Don't be ridiculous.
Bronson Pinchot, right?
Right. Of course, went on to be the legendary Surge. Right?
Right.
Largely, I think so. Beverly Hills Cop. Yeah, the legendary Surge. Of course, you can forget that.
Another trip back to the 80s.
Oh, yes.
Last week it was Cobra Kai. Now it's 80s sitcoms.
Which we were watching Netflix the other night, and we're getting ready to pick a show, and Cobra Kai came up, and I pointed out to Kenda, hey, that's the one the Beatleman likes. And she goes, oh, dear Lord. She's like, we're not watching that. I'm like, that's okay. That's fine. We're not going to watch that.
She still has no trust in my pop culture taste.
No, because she's a very bright woman. Pride graduate of then Mesa State College, now Colorado Mesa. So
I'll grant you that.
Though her judgment probably could be put into question considering she married me.
She made one mistake.
one horrible mistake. One poor decision. 31 years of marriage, 32 years ago. And she's been living with that mistake every single day of her life.
She's done a pretty good job fixing it up, though, I must say.
Oh, thank you.
You're pretty good at that.
Well, thank you, sir. God bless you, sir. Thank you. checks of the mail.
All right.
So your Dodgers in a bit of a tough spot, down 2-0 to the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's interesting because you don't, after the finish of game two, kind of feel like they might have woken up a little bit. I don't know. It's hard to say. We'll see what they do. But, you know, it shows you how razor thin the margin for error is. You know, you take a 1-1 game to the ninth in game one, and it falls apart, and then all of a sudden your offense is pressing for most of the game against a really good pitcher, but still, there's just no room for error. And when they got it going, it was kind of fun to watch there at the end. I wish they would have finished off that comeback. That would have been pretty spectacular. But give the Braves credit. Braves are coming up with productive at-bats. Freddie Freeman's a beast. Stop pitching to him, please.
Him and Ozzy Albies, don't pitch to either one of those guys, Albies or him, right? Yeah. Do not pitch to them.
Yeah. Well, at least the Albies, you feel like, I mean, he's a great player, but you feel like, all right, if he hits one out of the yard, and you know, that's a tip of the cap. With Freddie Freeman, you're like, why are you even going anywhere near that guy?
About this cat. You know what he can do, right? You know what
he
can do.
He's going to win an MVP. He's going to be the MVP of the year. So,
well, he's channeling Larry. Because he's got the Chipper Jones T-shirt on that he wears underneath his jersey. Because Larry and him are bros. Yeah.
They got their work cut out for him, that's for sure. The Dodgers do. I think this will be really interesting though, because this whole 7 games in 7 days thing. Once you go through your first three starters, if you're the Braves, so after this game three, you know, what are they going to do? It'll be interesting. And that's where the Dodgers, I feel like, at least have an advantage. They got guys coming out of the bullpen that can start, that can close, that can do all sorts of different things. So, but they got to get the offense going. Has to happen.
And I think it probably will. I still think the Braves win the series, but I don't think it, by any stretch of the imagination, it's over, because if there's one team that can overcome a 2-0 deficit, like you said, playing every single day, it's your LA Dodgers that have the makeup, the offense and the pitching to overcome that deficit.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. You know, it didn't feel that way though until the ninth inning of game two. They felt done. They felt dead in the water. They felt like they were pressing and all that stuff. So I'm glad they had that ninth inning, because at least as a Dodger fan, it makes me go, all right, I think they may have pushed through something a little bit there, and hopefully they can keep it going. I feel a little bit better, especially if they get a W in game three. Obviously game three, they have to win. Otherwise they're in really, really, really deep trouble. But if they get the win in game three here, I think Dodger fans probably feel pretty decent that they'll push this to 7, you know, and have a shot at it. But we'll see. Every game brings something new so far in this postseason, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Clayton Kershaw was supposed to get the start last night, didn't.
Yep.
What, back spasms for Clayton Kershaw. How worried are you about him?
When he was out in the bullpen doing his yoga / pitching mechanics /
doing the down dog,
whatever he had going on out there. Yeah, yeah. I didn't worry too much after I saw that.
Was he standing on a piece of wood like Karate Kid, yeah, like Mr. Miyagi? Yeah. Was he standing on a piece of wood?
Yeah, yeah. But what it told me, he's preparing to pitch. So, you know,
right.
I think that's the biggest thing for the Dodgers is he's mentally preparing himself. And I think I just saw a headline right now that said he's prepping up for Game 4. So I think that's a good news for the Dodgers from that standpoint. And does it worry you, though? Absolutely. I mean, all it takes is one little tweak and that guy's coming out of the game. So hopefully it was more precautionary than anything else.
I know you probably had the chance to see Ian Anderson, not to be confused with the flute playing, you know, a heavy metal Grammy album award winning Jethro Tull, that Ian Anderson. But Ian Anderson, right, the pitcher for the Atlanta Braves, that was a very poor stretch right there on my behalf. But that was
lengthy. Can we do Ryan Yarbrough next? I'm a Wyoming Cowboy fan. Ryan Yarbrough was a great receiver for the Cowboys back in the day, and apparently he was on the mound for the Rays yesterday.
Barely so. Okay. Yours went much better than mine did. But Anderson went, you know, we had quite a few walks, but 4 scoreless innings. What, 15, like 2/3 innings he had put together of pretty much scoreless baseball. Not bad for his first real time in the big leagues.
Yeah. Yeah, and we mentioned that, you know, the frontline guys for the Braves are every bit as talented. They don't have the experience maybe that some of the Dodgers guys do, but they're every bit as good and as talented. It's just if you get the length out of them, you're going to have that shot to win. And then that, you know, I think that was on display last night in the end of the game. Once they did get to that bullpen, there was some chinks in the armor, but the Dodgers, they got to get to it quicker. And in Game 1 and Game 2, they weren't able to do that. And so, give Anderson credit. He's nasty. That changeup is different than a lot of the changeups you're seeing these days, because a lot of the ones you're seeing are based on movement, and his is pure deception. Just all about the same arm speed and same release and just being very, very deceptive with it. It's not like the Williams guy from Milwaukee, they're calling him the airbender or something like that. Devin Williams, not the same kind of changeup. Both great pitches, but very, very different. So give him credit. He's found a way to be deceptive in a different manner than a lot of other pitchers are right now. And I think that's hard for teams that have so much information. They get used to looking for similar things, and he doesn't have that. He's not similar to most pitchers that they've been seeing. So he tied him up for a while, for sure.
Tyler Matzek got the win in relief last night for the Braves. Of course, was with the Colorado Rockies, was going to be one of the future frontline guys for the Colorado Rockies. And then he lost his control. He had some mental issues that he could never quite regain his form, and he certainly has now as a reliever for the Atlanta Braves. I think, look, I get it, your Dodgers, and you wanted them to win last night, but I think that's a pretty cool story because he could have ended up like a Steve Blass, a Rick Ankiel, a guy that could never quite get his stuff back, and we've seen him do that. Daniel Bard, of course, now with the Rockies, guys that have kind of been able to get through the middle part of it and regain their form.
Yeah. Yeah, those are cool stories, and they're neat for me as a pitching fan, just because you have moments where you're like, man, I have no idea where this ball's going, and it's the most helpless feeling in the world to be on the mound and just know that you don't have a clue where the ball is going to end up. It could, you know, the old Bull Durham line is, you know, yeah, I might hit the bull, or I might put one right on the corner, but it's a helpless feeling. And so that's kind of cool when they can figure that out and make those adjustments, because most guys don't. Most guys can't overcome that. And so that's kind of a neat story to have him be productive again. And you mentioned other guys like Bard and guys like that have been through that. And so those are neat stories. And for a guy like that to be as productive as he has this year, it just goes to show you how many different ways there are to get better as a player. It's not always physical. physical. In fact, it's rarely the physical things that hold them back. It's almost always mental things.
One final thing before we move on to the Astros and Rays series. Mark Melancon, another guy with ties to Colorado, pitched at Golden High School, pitches now for the Braves. Did you catch the question he was asked in the presser last night by the reporter who said, well, what positive thing can come from you guys blowing a 5-run lead?
I didn't see that.
And Melancon just looks at this guy and he goes, I'm not going to answer that. And I'm paraphrasing here. That's a stupid ass question. Why are you asking me? No. Okay. We won. That's the good thing that came from that. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes people in our business, I just kind of go, do you think about what you're going to ask somebody when that's one of the stupidest questions I've heard in a while. That, to quote Bryce Harper, clown question, bro.
My own question, bro, for sure. Yeah. I don't know what, what are you drawing from that? I mean, I don't understand that if you can try and somehow say, okay, well, it put some pressure on us at the end. Great. But that's not the pressure you want. You don't want the impending collapse type of pressure.
Right.
that's not the pressure you're looking to overcome. You want the pressure of playing a tight, close game and being able to, you know, kind of snuff an opponent out, so to speak. I don't know if that's the right term, but I hesitate to use the foot on the throat kind of thing. That's not cool anymore. You can't say that. But,
that's not good. No, please don't.
Yeah. even though I just said it, I don't think that's a great term to use anymore, but that's kind of prescient as a pitching staff and as a team, not the, oh God, how do we stop the snowball pressure? That's not fun for anybody.
I'm sure you're back coaching in Mesa with Jeff Rogers and Skip, you know, yeah. Hanks, that go out, some guy, it's, you know, you've had a, you know, 5-run lead and he's blown it. I'm sure you guys went out there and said, hey, great, you know, we're going to learn a lot from this. This is a good experience for you. this is a really good opportunity for you. All right. I'm sure that's what you told one of your bullpen guys that happened. That was a really good experience for you, I think.
Yeah. Well, when I was playing, you know, usually that conversation went with, Beetle, just give me the ball and go sit down. This is you've done enough. but when you're coaching, yeah, it's helpless when you're coaching because you can see it coming. Like that's the worst part about it is you can see one hit or one little error, the error that Albies made late in the game. I can tell you as a coaching staff, that is the most helpless, awful pit of the stomach feeling because you're like, I want to just scream at that guy, but he wasn't trying to make an error. It was just a tough bounce and all that stuff. And you're going, I don't know if we're going to overcome this. Like that might be it. That might be the one that does it. And so you just got to hope your guys can handle it. And they did. It was a pretty good play actually at third base to end that game. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a sick feeling when that stuff's happening.
But you learn a lot from that. You learn a lot from that. It's a really good experience. Actually, you mentioned errors. And so we flip over to the American League Championship Series where Jose Altuve has had, back-to-back games that had really, really costly errors for the Astros against Tampa Bay. And, look, not that it's all on him, and that's why they're down 3-0, but usually one of the better gloves in baseball. And he's in most had a throwing error last night. He's had a couple of really bad errors for them.
Yeah, and do you see the look on his face? Like they love to zoom in on guys after they get the yips and man, his face and his body language were not telling a story of I'll be okay. They weren't. And so his face was basically saying, please don't hit it here. And that's what, is shocking to me. You know, these are guys that have been at it for years. They take thousands of ground balls and BP and spring training. Although they didn't have much of a spring training or spring workouts. I guess they had some this year, but didn't make it past that. But either way, that body language tells the story. He does not want the ball. He does not want the ball to make anything other than a routine flip over to first base right now. And that's odd when that happens, right? You've seen it with guys like Knobloch. Even Steve Sachs had that problem for a while at the Dodgers. Yeah. What do you do? What do you tell those guys? Nope. Hey, throw it to second. What do you tell them? It's a 40-foot throw you just spiked 30 feet. What the heck?
And you know, and here they are. They're now down 3-0, and where I think the Dodgers could still come back and beat the Braves and go to the World Series.
There's a chance there.
I can't say the Astros are done, but they're pretty close to being done. The little, like in the turkey, the little thing that pops out to let you know it's done, it's starting to poke up a little bit, just where they're it's almost ready to be taken out of the oven, I think, for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if they actually don't get swept. I think it was an interesting run for the Astros, but they're missing some parts. They just are. They've got a really dangerous offensive lineup for the first 7 guys. 8 and 9, not so much. But, you know, and that's not a bad thing. That's a pretty good lineup. But they're missing some arms. They're missing, obviously, his defense now to go along with that. And then you're facing a team like Tampa Bay that's, quite frankly, they're just rolling. I would not want to play Tampa Bay right now. In fact, if you're a Dodger or an Atlanta fan, you hope they sweep so they have to sit there and watch you for a few games.
Right.
Because you don't want to play them right now. They're getting every big hit. They're making every big play. They're making the pitches. They've got it rolling. So I don't see Houston getting off the deck here. But stranger things have happened, I guess, but not many.
Every night it's somebody different too, right? For them. Every night it's somebody, you know, Arozarena's been great, but, you know, Margot had the big game on Monday with the unbelievable catch along the right field line. Yep. And of course at the 3-run bomb, it's been somebody different every night for them and for Kevin Cash.
Yeah. And I think the cool part of that is that we've talked about this before. It's putting on display how good a team they really are. You don't have a bunch of household names, but Manuel Margot, that's a player, you know, that's a heck of a player. And Rosarena obviously has jumped into the spotlight, but he was fairly unknown going into this season. And then you got, just other guys. Brandon Lau has stepped up. I mean, just name after name have stepped up that nobody really knew who they were until this year, but they're deep. That team's good.
You know, we talked about it on the show today that they don't have the championships, but Tampa Bay, in a way, is kind of the baseball version of the Patriots because they know when to let veteran guys go. They know how to develop players to, you know, whether it's, you know, draft and develop guys within their own system. They know when to get a guy. They still, maybe a team has given up on a veteran player, but they know there's still gas in the tank and they're able to get kind of the maximum of that player, what's left in his career. They don't spend a ton of money. We mentioned $28 million. That's it this year for the Tampa Bay Rays. They've always been very smart about how they approach veteran players. Like not falling in love with Evan Longoria, a player that's often hurt, but also tremendous defensive third baseman, great offensive player, but they knew that look the cost was going to be too much and got to move on, and they've always been able to move on and keep themselves in contention in the toughest division in baseball, which I just think that's remarkable about Tampa Bay.
Yeah, it's not a matter of being smart with their money. They aren't spending it. They're spending money.
No.
That's the craziest part about it is they're just not spending. They're not being smart with it. They're cheap.
But they invest wisely, yeah, though, where we crack on Correct. Jeff Rydich for $75 million for Ian Desmond, you know, the 20 plus million for Daniel Murphy. And those things have not worked out for the Rockies. Those have been poor investments. Tampa Bay is like that, just that really smart investment guy that doesn't put a ton of money out there, but the return is always the return on investment. Might not be a huge investment, but the return is like 3 or 4 times fold what they invested, because look where they're a win away from going to the World Series for the second time in every year. Yeah. When was the last time we talked about Tampa Bay being the worst team in the American League East? It's been a long time, right?
Rare.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's rare. Yeah, it's pretty rare. And I don't, you know, do you tip your cap to player development, or do you tip your cap to the pencil pushers that figure out the analytics of things? Do you tip your cap to the GM for figuring out dollars and cents and value and all that stuff? And the answer is you do it to all of those guys. I mean, it takes that kind of effort, a collaborative effort, to figure all that stuff out. But they've been remarkable. over the last few years, just being competitive, let alone being as good as they are right now, is being competitive in with the Yankees and the Red Sox. And then even the Blue Jays have had a few years.
They've spent money.
They've not been great. Yeah. And so they've, I don't know if anybody's looking for the formula, you ought to be calling them from the small market standpoint anyway, but I don't think they're gonna give up too many secrets. So,
all right. Before we finish up today, we talked about Eddie Van Halen the other day when we tried to record this and it crapped out. So a couple quick questions here. Favorite Van Halen song album would be what for you?
Yeah. Well, we said Jump, because what kid didn't love Jump?
Me. I'm the kid that didn't love
Jump. I know you don't like it, which is a little bit of a knock on you. And let's be honest.
Probably so.
I mean, it's the fun song, right? It's the epic band. It's their fun song that probably is.
Got my back against a record machine.
But it was their fun song.
Know what I mean?
I don't know if there's, are there other examples? Like think of some other bands that have this fun song that you know, but it's just not their best.
Oh, like, gosh.
I don't
like some
know
Def Leppard stuff, like Animal, yeah, or, you know, that's okay, but, you know, and look, and I love the 1984 album. It was a great album. I love Van Halen, both versions of it, but that song, I just always went, just wait, come on, Van Halen, you're not a cheesy keyboard band. I know, Eddie, you want to expand, you want to explore, but, okay, one other music-related thing, AC/DC, new album coming out next month, November 13th, Power Up.
Awesome.
Have you heard anything of it yet?
No.
I think Shot in the Dark, I think, is the first song I heard. I think Buckeye played Power Up, the title track, the other day. It sounds like AC/DC. They know what their wheelhouse is. They know who they are, what they are, and they're not going to try to do like Eddie Van Halen and use cheesy keyboards and Jump.
Yeah.
They are who they are.
Maybe you'll fight me for this one, but AC/DC, they stink.
Stink? They don't stink.
They stink. It's not great music, but you're dead on. When they stick to their formula, all right,
they're good.
Stadium rock, whatever you want to call it.
But I'm a little. I have to take exception with here. The Bon Scott era stuff. Come on, Night Prowler, Ride On,
no,
Highway
man.
To Hell. Come on,
look,
really?
TNT, the
Dirty Deeds, Big Balls.
Think about it. The best AC/DC songs are only when played to a crowd at a sporting event or something like that. Like, you know, come on.
No Thunderstruck?
That's
come on. Not even Hell's
exactly.
Bells? Trevor Hoffman, Hell's Bells? Come on. Really?
They're okay songs on their own, but you can't help but think of like some crowd and light show, which is cool, but you're not there all the time. Like, you can't just instantly transport yourself to these, you know, music venues. Then they're cool. It's like Kiss. All right. They're a step above Kiss.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Several steps above Kiss, sir. steps above. I take great exception with that.
They're nowhere near Metallica.
I agree.
You know,
Metallica's fantastic. I agree.
So that's my feelings on AC/DC. They're okay.
I get it that Angus is, you know, the schoolboy outfit's part of their image, like Eddie is with Iron Maiden, but the makeup is for Kiss. But it's just pretty bad when a guy's like pushing 70 and he's got the little short pants on. It just doesn't seem right anymore.
You feel like you should probably like partake because you're not sure how much longer they're going to. It's like the Rolling Stones right? All right. This is one of the greatest bands ever, blah, blah. Whether you love the Rolling Stones or not, you're kind of like, maybe we should probably go see the Stones. And I don't know how long Mick's going to make it, man. He falls down and breaks a hip. We're done.
Well, had the heart scare.
yeah.
previously. So,
is that what you're feeling with AC/DC, maybe? You know,
I guess.
Angus does one more schoolboy outfit guitar kick across the stage and slips a disc. They're done. Jim didn't get to see him one last time, yeah. You know?
So right now, well, I think like most people, I have zero interest in going to a concert at this point in time. So, you know, depending on what the tour looks like for AC/DC down the road, I'm probably a decent chance I'm not going to see them the way things are.
So but. Here's the real question.
Sure.
Which band will be the first to say, forget it, man, we're doing it anyway. And they pick a venue that'll let them and they bring 50,000 people back for a concert. Who's going to be the one that's like, you know,
Nickelback, but they won't, but they'll never get 50,000 people in to see them. That's the only problem. But it'd be probably Nickelback. I can see Chad Kroeger flipping the middle finger. Yeah, we're coming back. And like 10 people show up. I could see that.
Yeah.
Well, the jackass with the Smash Mouth at Sturgis. I mean,
yeah, but that doesn't count. That's Smash Mouth.
That's Smash Mouth.
It was at Sturgis. They weren't there for Smash Mouth.
They were, yeah. They just happened. Smash Mouth just happened to be at Sturgis. It just happened to be there. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Good question. Nickelback was the one that just came to my mind immediately. If Lemmy Kilmister and Motorhead, if he was still alive, it would have been Lemmy. Lemmy would have said,
"It's not going to happen.
Screw you, chaps. I'm coming out and we're going to rock your asses off." I could have seen him doing that. God rest his soul. Lemmy Kilmister. Beatle, we'll get together again next week. I said we're going to do this for like 15 minutes. It's now coming up on 30 minutes. It always goes too fast.
Yeah. I got a busy schedule, Jim. You have fit me in making new Mavericks every day, just recruiting the heck out of these Mavs. So I got, you know, 20 minutes a week to spare for you.
Rumble on, Mavs.
Rumble on.
Rumble on. All right, till the next time. Davis and Beatle, thanks again for joining us.